now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
Good evening, everybody. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio. It is September 19, 2014, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. What a show we've got for you tonight. We have had a bunch of requests in recent years, actually, to get somebody on the program to talk about shadow people. So tonight is the night. In about 30 minutes, we're going to be joined by Jason Offit, who has written a book, Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. And we are going to be talking about shadow people. What are shadow people? That's obviously the first question we're going to ask him. When I was a kid, I was born in 1975. So when I got like all of the Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown books and everything like that, and read about all of the different mysteries in this world, I read about stuff like the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, UFOs. So, as time went on, and I guess it would have been like the mid-90s probably, mid-90s, 2000s, I first started hearing about shadow people. And to me, it was like, what is this? This is like something, this is new. I'm not used to all this new, weird stuff. I'm old school. I want to hear about the stuff I know about. Shadow people is just like weird to me. What is this? People see shadows and they think are people? Didn't even understand it. But a lot of people see them. And so tonight we're going to talk about shadow people. And I read his book. I just got finished with it a while ago, a couple of minutes ago, actually. And it's called, as noted, Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. And I did learn a lot. I didn't know a lot about shadow people going in. But the one thing that struck me about the book, and we'll talk about this tonight, is that shadow people is a new spin on an old phenomenon. I remember when I was young and reading books by Brad Steiger, who, by the way, wrote the foreword to Jason's book. Brad Steiger talked about various strange individuals, including a fella that was referred to as the Grinning Man, which was a tall fella that I guess people would report seeing, like, behind a fence. And they knew he was tall because they would see his head pop up over the other side of the fence. And, you know, based on the size of the fence, this would be a really, really tall guy. And the guy was just grinning at him. And I remember when I was a kid, this just scared the hell out of me. I was like, if I ever see the Grinning Man, I will have a heart attack. And I believe he also wrote about the Hat Man. And the Hat Man is talked about in this book. And so we're going to talk to Jason about that tonight. Those of you that are interested in the shadow people phenomenon, well, today is your lucky day. We're going to be talking to him about all of that. Now, today, obviously, we're going to be taking your phone calls and emails for the first half hour. Before I go to the phone, somebody is already calling right now. So if you are calling, stand by. I'll pick up the phones here in just a moment. But for everybody else, let me quickly do the in-house notes. This is the After Dark Radio Show. We are every Friday night live at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. The website is afterdarkradioshow.com. Everything you ever wanted to know about the show is up there at afterdarkradioshow.com. We have three phone numbers that you can try here tonight. Toll free, it's 855-478-4478. West of the Rockies, you can call 425-488-0525. And east of the Rockies, you can call 425-482-1686. If you'd like to send me an email, brian@wrestlingobserver.com. We are looking to set up an After Dark radio show web address, an email address, to kind of make things easier for everybody. But for now, we're still at brian@wrestlingobserver.com. And you can use After Dark in the subject line to make sure that I get it here for this show. We have a link up there to our producer, Garrett. My buddy Andrew, who is in fact known as Brian's Buddy Andrew, is our Facebook admin. If you'd like to like our Facebook page, head up there and check it out. He posts articles every single day. Weird articles, weird photos. If you love this show, you will love the official Facebook page, which is facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. Of course, all of this is up at afterdarkradioshow.com. If you go up right there right now, you can also download last week's show. Last week, we were joined by Lauren Coleman, talking all things cryptozoological. A very fun interview with Lauren Coleman. That is up there right now as a free download at afterdarkradioshow.com. It's going to be up there until the show is over, so I would recommend you head up there and pick it up if you want to get it, because once this show ends, this show is going to go up as the free replay. So head up there and check that out. And of course, if you'd like to contact us on Twitter, it is twitter.com/BrianAlvarez or simply @BrianAlvarez. That is where you can go for the Twitter feed. And I will be checking the live Twitter feed throughout the evening. And so if you are one of those people who don't feel like calling in, well, you can tweet me. And I will answer questions, that sort of thing as well. So those are the ways to contact me. So for now, until the half hour mark, we are going to be taking phone calls, 855-478-4478. Give us a call toll-free right now. If that number does not work, you're welcome to call either of the other lines. West of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, it is 425-482-1686. Give me a call right now. Let me know what is on your mind. Have you ever seen a shadow person? If you have, I would like to hear from you. I've also, as promised, in a little while here, I will be playing some EVPs. If you listened to last week's show, we had a caller, Nick, who said that he had done an investigation at a local high school, and he had recorded some EVPs. And so I'm going to be playing these on the show. Depending on how your headphones are set up and how everything is EQ'd, maybe you'll be able to hear something, maybe not. But we are going to play them here, so you can get ready for that. And as Ed has noted here, no freaking way in hell am I listening to this show while doing the paper route. I am going to wait until I am safe at home. And Andrew here says, I cannot wait to listen to tonight's show. I've seen a few shadow people at my work over the years. Well, Andrew, you're welcome to call in right now and tell me about them. And you're welcome to email as well and tell me your story. If you have got a shadow person story, I would certainly like to hear it. So lines are open. Give me a call right now. In the meantime, we've obviously got some news to talk about here on the program. I've got all sorts of articles here, evidence of dream telepathy. I've got a story about plankton on the International Space Station. I don't even know how that happens, but we'll talk about all of that. It's coming up in just a minute as well. All right, to the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air. Going once. Can you hear me? Going twice. And you are gone. I don't know. Maybe that was a shadow person calling. Make sure when you call, by the way, this is a live show, and there is somewhat of a delay. So if you do give us a call, make sure you turn your whatever your listening device is. Probably not the radio, but turn it off, and then you should be able to hear me, and we won't have any problems. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello, Brian. It's Marco from Las Vegas.
What's up, Marco?
Oh, I got through this time. I was I called before. I don't know what happened. Maybe I broke my phone too many times.
It's very possible.
Yeah, well, I got through calling about this. Well, I think it was bizarre to me, this bizarre experience I had Monday morning.
So, recent. This past Monday. Right. What happened?
Yeah. All right. Well, I got up extra early on Monday. I got a couple more hours at work. So, but I was still very tired. I didn't get enough sleep from it. I was up very late Sunday night. So, like, oh, I got to get up. So I put on a radio show. It wasn't yours, unfortunately. Sorry.
Devastated.
I put on a radio show just to, you know, just to, you know, keep me awake. And I ended up falling asleep for another good 30 minutes. Had my head, I fall asleep with the headphones on, with the radio show playing. So I fall asleep and have this dream. It's almost like an alternate thing. Because in my dream, I'm laying in my bed exactly as I was when I was falling asleep. But I knew it was a dream because I looked at my walls and they were red. And I saw things that I usually don't have here in real life. And then I looked out my window and saw that it was nighttime. So in my dream, it was like 11 p.m. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I don't got to go to work right now. I'll just go home. So I got to work in the morning. And in real time, the same radio show I was listening to when I fell asleep was playing. So I thought that was kind of bizarre. I thought it maybe is one of those things where, you know, if you think about something about throughout the week, maybe you might dream about it. I'm sure everybody's had that.
So hold on a second. So you fell asleep and you knew you were dreaming.
Yeah.
But in your dream, you also were listening to the radio show.
The exact same radio show.
And so you were, okay.
So it was playing in real time.
Okay, so maybe you were half asleep. You were in a half dream state. Is that what you're saying?
It felt like it. I felt like it was dreaming 100%. I looked around. I knew it was a dream. You didn't have that nice feel. And then when I woke up from that, and the radio show it picked up where I left off in the dream. In real time. I thought it was the most bizarre thing. I thought maybe I was tripping. And later, a couple hours later that day, during my lunch break, I went to rewind. It was around the time where I fell asleep just to see if it was the exact same thing, and it was. Like, they're talking about the same thing.
So essentially you had a lucid dreaming experience.
Yeah.
I would conclude you weren't dreaming at all, except for the fact that you were looking around your room and you felt that you were clearly dreaming. What did you see on the walls that's not normally there?
Well, they were painted. I mean, right now they're just, they're white, weird beige color. In the dream, they were painted red, completely red. And they were just regular objects that I wouldn't have. Like, I have a couple things, like my high school diploma and a couple pictures up here next to my TV. Like, I don't remember those being there at all. Other different knickknacks or objects that I don't have here.
Very weird.
And I'm looking out my windows, and because this dream was around 11 a.m. and I had to be up to go to work for get ready and do a bunch of stuff before 1 p.m. So maybe it was like a weird 12-hour shift in the dream.
So you were conscious enough to hear the radio playing the whole time, but your vision was you were in a different room at a different time of day.
No, well, in my room, but in with all those different things, it felt like an alternate universe.
Very, very strange. Well, hey, I'm glad you came out of it.
Well, my question is, do you think such a thing would be possible, or is this, is this something real bizarre? Or?
Well, I'm sure it's happened. I mean, people have lucid dreaming experiences. I mean, people have all sorts of weird some people dream that they've left their body and they look down and they see their own body sleeping. There's all sorts of weird experiences that people have when they're, I've never heard anything quite like what you've explained, but I'm sure that that's happened to many people.
Yeah, well, I thought it was kind of bizarre because it's never happened before. And this is something I'd like to share. Maybe if somebody else had something like this before, maybe they can compare and contrast.
All right. Well, I'll open it up to everybody. I want to thank you very much for the call. Lucid dreaming experience there. Have you ever had anything similar where you're clearly asleep and you know you're dreaming, but you also in some way are experiencing the real world? As he noted, he was listening to the radio and he was listening to the radio the whole time. But I guess visually he was somewhere else. Have you ever had an experience like this? let us know. Phone number is 855-478-4478. West of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. And east of the Rockies, 425-482-1686. Call on any topic. If you want to talk about last week's show with Lauren Coleman, for example, you can talk to us about that as well. So on last week's show, Nick called in and he said that he had recorded some EVPs from a high school in Fresno, California, an allegedly haunted school. And so he has sent me four EVPs, and we're going to play those here in a moment. I am going to, I will tell you what you're supposed to be hearing, and then, actually, you know what? I'll play it first, then I'll tell you what you're supposed to be hearing, and then I'll play it again. And we'll see what you have to say about this. So let's start with this first one here. This clip, make sure I've got everything ready to go. All right, this one here, it says, right at the beginning of this clip, you can hear a voice sort of sing the name Nikki, which is my name. So here we go.
Is there anybody here?
So it's apparently the very beginning you hear it say Nikki.
Is there anybody here?
I can definitely hear some scratchiness there. One more time.
Is there anybody here?
Does that sound like Nikki to you? All right, this next one here. You can hear my brother ask, was that you laughing? And then right after the question, you can hear a faint either nope or yup. So someone needs to tell this spirit to be a little more clear. So once again, you can hear his brother ask, was that you laughing? By the way, I've already screwed up my own plan here of playing them first. But anyway, was that you laughing? And afterwards, you should be able to hear nope or yup or some sort of response. Here we go.
Was that you laughing?
You hear it? After was that you laughing, you should hear nope or yup.
Was that you laughing?
I did appear to hear something there that sounded like nope to me. All right, this one here is, he says again, my brother is speaking in the beginning, and after he says, can you say something? And you can hear a spooky voice say, run away, as if they were out of breath. Here we go.
We're here friendly, trying to catch you. Can you say something?
All right, one more time. He's going to ask, can you say something? And a voice says, run away.
We're here friendly, trying to catch you. Can you say something?
Yeah, that was run away right there. Yep, that sounded like run away. One more time. That was pretty creepy, I'm not going to lie. All right, and finally, this is part of the same EVP session that we caught Runaway. And on the last EVP, my brother says, can you say something? On this clip, you can hear a whispered voice say, say something. Maybe it was a late response to my brother's question. So we are listening to a voice whispering, say something. There it was. Play it again. Right there. Say something. There you go. I gotta say, of all of them, I think the third one was the best. The voice saying, run away. Let's hear that one more time.
We're here friendly, trying to catch you. Can you say something?
Yeah, run away. Sounds like the dog was saying it. There you go. Run away. Run away. There you go. Three EVPs from a high school in Fresno, California. Those are from Nick. So what do you think? Let me know. Any of the usual ways to contact us. EVPs are always very interesting to me. I don't know what to make of them, to be honest with you. But that runaway was that was pretty good. I gotta say. A couple of emails here. This is from David. Love the Lauren Coleman interview last week. I'm about to blow your mind with an idea about the Patterson Bigfoot film. Most people believe it is a suit, but if it is a suit, it is too sophisticated for the time period. So let us assume it is a suit. How else could something like that exist in the 1960s? Time travel! Think about it. Someone created the suit in the future, traveled back in time, and has played a big prank on us. If you think about it, time travel would explain a lot of things. You mentioned that your memories have faded about the Thunderbird picture. What if that was caused by someone traveling back in time and causing the Thunderbird picture to have never happened? Which is why nobody can produce it now. But the memories that people have of it still exist and slowly fade away as the Thunderbird picture is wiped from history. What if there is a society far into the future that can travel through time and for whatever reason, they're going back in time to create all of these things? Bigfoot, Loch Ness, UFOs, etc. May not make any sense to us, but maybe they have a grand plan for doing so. Or maybe it is just some future juvenile delinquents messing with us. Well, you know, it's as good a theory as any, although I will say that I like to go with the simplest explanation. And I'm not sure that the simpler explanation for the Patterson film is time travel, as opposed to maybe this guy actually caught a Bigfoot on film. But who knows? I don't know what it was. And so there you go. This person here says, you mentioned this about a month ago in your commentary on After Dark Radio. What do you make of it? I think this guy would make an interesting guest on the show. I think it is BS, but you being a skeptic, I wonder what your thoughts were about it. It is the supposed messages from Robin Williams after death. Someone claimed that they had contacted him. I'm going to try and find the audio here in a bit. But I listened to it. I don't know. Robin Williams made a lot of movies. He did a lot of interviews. He said a lot of things. So it's very possible it was just a mixed match of quotes that he made in movies. But I don't know. Let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Mike from Indiana.
Mike, what's up?
Hey. I had a general question about, we were talking about lucid dreaming. The question was, Joe Rogan often talks about, you know, psychedelic drugs, whether it's DMT or magic mushrooms, and you know, one of the ways he's explained it is almost like a connection to a spiritual world. I'm wondering, you know, have you ever known anybody that's, you know, experimented with that sort of thing, and you know what it was like, and you know if there was any type of connection to some other type of you know, alternate world there.
My wife, believe it or not, she when she was in college, they went to Peru. And as part of the class, they met with a shaman, and they tried ayahuasca. And I'll tell you all this right now. We will get her on the show and have her tell the whole story. But she absolutely had an experience. I don't know if she considers it like traveling into another world, but she certainly saw and experienced some really weird things. So, I know someone very well, actually, who's done so.
Right, yeah, you know, I can almost kind of relate. I've never done ayahuasca, but with the mushroom psilocybin. Trying that, it's almost hard to explain in a sense, but yes, it's almost a connection, I guess you could call it, to another part of the world we're living in. It's a really unique experience. You know, I don't recommend it or anything to anybody, but it's definitely something, especially on the topic of whether it's, you know, ghost or anything like that. When you do something like that, it kind of gives you an alternate perspective, and it's just something to think about.
Well, let me tell you this. So I live in Seattle, and if you live in Seattle, this is going to be a weird analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. If you live in Seattle, you see a lot of trees, and very few, if any, are palm trees. But if I go to Hawaii, there's going to be palm trees everywhere, for example. So if I go to this place, anybody who goes to this place is going to see the same things. Anybody who goes to Hawaii is going to see palm trees. It's just the way that it is. So I've always tried to... So when she did ayahuasca or you did mushrooms, okay, there are two possibilities. First off, virtually everybody that does these things has these visions. So the visions, whatever they are, they're real to that person. So the question is, when you take these mushrooms or ayahuasca or whatever, does it cause you to just have a vision? Or is it opening up a doorway to somewhere else? I don't know the answer. Now, what has always been weird to me is, in her example, you know, when people take ayahuasca or when you take mushrooms, I don't know actually how it is with mushrooms, but I know this is how it is with ayahuasca and also how it is with DMT. People always see the same stuff. So is it like my Hawaii analogy? If everybody sees the same thing, does that mean that they're really going somewhere? Because when we dream, we don't all have the same dream. When I dream tonight, I guarantee me and you are going to have different dreams. Me and my wife are going to have different dreams. We all have different dreams. But when people take these substances, they all see the same things. So it's kind of like, is that proof that everyone, that they're actually going somewhere? And this is not just a figment of their imagination because they all see the same thing. And so it kind of, I've always wondered about that. I don't know how it is with mushrooms. Like, what did you see when you were on mushrooms? And do you know anybody else who has done them? And can you compare it to what they've seen?
Yes. Well, speaking to that, you take it a step further and you say, okay, if you do all kind of see the same things, and when I say see the same things, I almost mean feel the same things, because it's almost not necessarily a visual, but it's more like a sense, and it's like a feeling, and it's common with the people that I do it. It's always the same. Like, it's like when you're doing it at the same time, it's always that same type of feeling. So the question goes a bit further for me, and it's like, if that is actually happening, and it is almost like, you know, everybody's experiencing the same thing, is it, you know, being on the topic of, you know, after dark, you know, if there was an alien species out there, often, you know, the idea of mushrooms is that, you know, it's possible it came from some comet or asteroid or whatever, and that it's kind of like a view into their world, you know, a view into some other species' world when you take these substances.
Yeah, I know that, like, the shamans, for example, and other people that have experimented with these drugs, I mean, the idea is that it is a doorway to somewhere else. The idea is not that you're taking these things and your brain is creating some visions. I mean, they believe they're going somewhere else. So I don't know, but I've always been kind of fascinated by it. So we'll have her on and talk about it one of these days. The other thing I would say is, like, you know, if I hit you in the head with a pipe, you're going to see stars. And if you hit me in the head with a pipe, I'm going to see stars. That doesn't mean we went to space. You know what I mean? So there is the other side of the argument that we all do see the same thing when we get hit in the head. We see stars. So I don't know. It's a very interesting topic, but I want to thank you very much for the call. We will have her on someday to discuss that. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Nick from California.
Nick, we just played your EVPs.
Yeah, I listened. Thank you for that.
That's right. What do you make of this?
I kind of want to comment on the last caller, what you guys were talking about. I don't know if you're familiar with Terrence McKenna, but he had idea that the mushroom is actually alien, like it's extraterrestrial. If you think about it, like, there's which way can an alien easily get information into the human without exposing itself, and that way would be it to disguise itself as a drug, which could be mushrooms like psilocybin or even DMT, which is also a chemical that is within used within ayahuasca. So, yeah, I just wanted to comment because he wanted to, I guess he was trying to figure out, just a little theory, I guess. Even the stoned ape theory, though, still by Terrence McKenna, about primitive ancestors stumbled upon some mushrooms after a climate change because they were looking for new food sources. They ended up stumbling upon these mushrooms. And it taught them how to, well, I guess it didn't teach them, but it gave them an extreme experience to where they had to tell the others, which kind of created language. It taught them a way, it created a passion within them to express themselves, which is a form of art also. But art, I guess, came from the creation of language, because once language was created, you get to talk with other people and communicate in your community, and that starts the beginning of ideas and also art.
I think that might have been a Graham Hancock. He may have written a book somewhat similar to that as well. I remember reading about this, but the idea that, like you said, there was a period where primitive man stumbled upon these hallucinogenic drugs, and the journeys that they took when they were on these drugs, they made discoveries. It was mind expanding in a way that propelled humanity along quicker than would have otherwise occurred without these drugs. I've heard that theory before.
Yeah, and it also talks about how there's a point in our history where our brain doubles like multiple sizes within a short period of time.
Yes,
and till this day, no scientist can explain like why that is. And
I think the typical explanation is just, I forget what it was. It was something about diet, like something changed in the diet that resulted in that. I think that would be the official scientific explanation. Oh, okay. But other people would say it's got to be the hallucinogenic drugs expanding people's minds.
Yeah, not just that, but like creating language. So I guess it was just a key element to help create this, to help our ancestors, right? Primitive ancestors, I guess, learn how to create things and, you know, think on a whole nother level, I guess.
That's right. Are you planning on any new expeditions, by the way?
I'm thinking about it. I got to look into some areas I can easily get to without, you know, going through too much trouble to get some permission and stuff, you know, just maybe some local stuff. I don't know.
I got to ask you one thing about your EVPs. I'm glad you called. You, in one of them, you flat out told the spirit we're here to catch you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would use that term when trying to, I guess you are trying to catch it, but I don't know. I don't know if I would use that particular term. We're here to catch you.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's why it ended up telling us to run away.
And maybe it did. That's right. Maybe that's why it felt threatened.
Yeah. Well, that's because I'm really new to this, so I guess I'm still amateur, but I guess you learn from your mistakes.
That's right. Well, I want to thank you very much for the call and for the EVPs, and please keep in touch and let me know if you've got new expeditions coming up or any new EVPs, and we'll play them here on the show. All right, one more call, then we'll go to the guest. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Matthew from Hamilton calling.
What's up, Matthew?
Hey. It might be a little off topic, but I just wanted to share a little something since I heard you talking about dreams and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through a little surgery 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you remember, I called, I was sitting in hospital, and I called for the first time.
I do remember this.
And, yeah, so that was a big thrill for me, but so I went through a little surgery, and it was my first time ever having anything done that was pretty significant without general anesthetic. So I was really nervous about that and wasn't exactly sure, you know, how it was going to go. I knew they were going to sedate me to a degree, and I knew they would take care of me as best they could. But what they were able to do was things were getting really complicated as far as the procedure itself. So, you know, my anxiety levels were through the roof, and I was starting to lose it a bit. So what they were actually able to do was they totally erased my memory. So apparently I was definitely awake the whole time. I definitely experienced the entire procedure. Sorry about the noise here. I stepped outside.
That's right.
I apologize for that. So I definitely experienced the procedure, and I definitely apparently was conscious the entire time. But by the time I snapped out of it and came to, I have no memory of the entire thing. And I have no idea how it was done. I have no idea how they managed to accomplish that. But it made my life a lot easier. And it was my first procedure without general anesthetic. So I have absolutely zero memory of anything that went on. And I just think that's pretty amazing.
So when you woke up, did they say to you, like, okay, you know, this happened, but don't worry about it because we wiped it from your memory? I mean, did they tell you that?
Exactly. So I was getting, you know, sedated with basically intravenous Ativan, basically. Ativan is an anti-anxiety drug. And, you know, a little bit of numbing cream and nothing more. But as soon as they found out that, you know, the procedure was going to be a little bit more complicated than they first thought, they basically asked me, would you like to have a little nap type thing? And I said, well, of course. And they said, okay, well, you're going to experience it, but we promise you, but when you wake up, you will not have any recollection of anything that happened. So the pain that you experienced, the fears that you experienced, and all the anxiety that you experienced, you will not be able to recall. And success. I have absolutely zero memory of the entire thing.
Wow.
I'm not sure how that is possible. But it happened, and I can't tell you I remember the pain. I can't tell you I remember my fears and my anxieties. All I remember is going down there, freaking out, of course. You know, seeing the surgical setup and every doctor and surgeon in there getting ready, and the glass or the blood splattered glass pieces that they put around you. I remember all that, but as soon as they said they were doing what they were doing, I have no memory of the entire thing.
So as opposed to, like, I'm trying to figure out what they would have done. So instead of, like, wiping your memory, like going back and trying to erase part of your memory, you're telling me that it seems that you were given something, for example, like, I don't know if they put something intravenously or they gave you something to eat or something like that, where it was designed, like, say, for, like, the next 6 hours, whatever happens, it just will not register in your memory. Is that kind of the way that you understand it?
Yeah. They tell me I was conscious, because if I wasn't, they would have had to give me general anesthetic, which they don't do, unfortunately, in the adult world for this particular procedure. I had a portacath put in, which is a line that goes, it sits in your chest and goes through your jugular and to your heart. And I've had many of them done before, several, but in the pediatric community, they put you out for that kind of thing 100% of the way. They put the tube down the throat. They do, you know, the oxygen. They do the whole nine. But in the adult world, apparently, they figure everybody's too tough for that, and they don't do it that way. So what they said they would do for me to eliminate any fear was that when I woke up, I wouldn't be able to remember what had happened. I wouldn't be able to remember the pain, and I wouldn't be able to remember the stress of it all. And I wasn't so sure that was going to be the case, but I can tell you 100% of the way, it's definitely the case.
Wow.
So it's made life a little bit easier for whatever's ahead of me in the adult community now, medically, because, you know, it's a lifelong thing with me. I'll be in and out of hospital for the rest of my life. I'll be having little procedures, big procedures like this for the rest of my life. Not all of them are going to come with general anesthesia. So we were talking about medical advancements a little bit and how interested I was in that. And there's one of them for you. That's all.
Wow.
You know? So well, if anybody out there, too, you know, has fears and concerns and worries about, you know, facing that type of thing, they can, you know, ease themselves a little bit, knowing that there's ways of doing things and there's ways of getting around that type of thing, because it's been, you know, not exactly a pleasant experience.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call, and if you get a chance to find out like what exactly they did, like call me back and let me know. If anybody listening to this right now knows how exactly they accomplished this, give us a call and give us an update. Save it, however, for about an hour from now, because we have got to get going on this interview or we are not going to have enough time. Coming up right now, it is time to talk shadow people. We are about to be joined by Jason here, Jason Offit. He is the author of Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. And many people have asked for a show on shadow people. And so it is your lucky day. So without further ado, let's get Jason here on the show talking shadow people here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. After Dark Radio, Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio and the Dark Matter Radio Network. And we are very happy today to be joined by Jason Offit. He's the author of Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. And Jason, how are you doing today?
Doing great, doing great. Weather's been nice here for the first time in a couple weeks. So I'm feeling all right.
Whereabouts are you?
Northwest Missouri.
Northwest Missouri. Well, you guys had some, was it snow? What was the weather like there?
Well, not quite snow, but the lows at night were in the 30s for a little bit, which it's too darn early for that.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just got done about 15 minutes ago reading your book, and a very interesting book. We've had a lot of people requesting a show about shadow people, and I thought it was interesting because at the very beginning of the book, you talk about how, for some people, and I was one of those people, this seems like kind of a new phenomenon in the sense that when I was a kid, you know, I grew up and I read about Bigfoot and UFOs and the Loch Ness Monster. And when I got into my 20s or mid-20s, I started hearing people talking about shadow people. And I had never read about this growing up, and so it was kind of like, well, this has just got to be some sort of new weird thing that people are talking about. But as you mentioned in the book, people have been talking about shadow people forever, and you started out, I guess when you were young, you saw them, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, it was. I saw them walking through my room as I was going to bed, which, which wasn't fun.
So you would be a good person to talk about, not just for the history of shadow people, but you can tell us some firsthand experiences with them as well.
Right, and that's where basically the book came from. I've been fascinated by shadow people ever since I was a kid. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and one night we lived in the country, so we could keep our blinds drawn all the time because we don't have any peeping toms. And on a moonlit night, I could see every detail in my room: the bookshelf, the desk, the end of the bed, the Farrah Fawcett poster on the wall, so that shows you how old I am. And in one night, I just laid down, turned the light off, and one corner of my room was extremely dark. And out of it, a man walked, and it was scared the hell out of me. And it walked by my bed and into the hallway, and I screamed for my dad because there was a man in the house, and he turned on the lights and came in, and he saw nothing. I saw a number of entities, you know, shadow people entities within the next 6 months from then, from that point. But that really spurred my interest, and I in my head called them shadow people because that's what they looked like to me. And it wasn't until the 90s when Art Bell got fascinated by these and gave them the name shadow people that people started talking about them.
Now, the foreword for your book is written by Brad Steiger, which is quite the catch, by the way, to have him write the foreword of your book. And, you know, I was talking about not really have heard, I never really heard anything about shadow people. And I guess really the issue was that was just the name that they ended up being given. But you talk in your book about the Hat Man. And once I read that, it was like, okay, I've heard of the Hat Man. I think Brad Steiger wrote about that in all of his books. Is that correct?
Yes, he has written about the Hat Man before.
Okay, so that would count basically as the same sort of thing we're talking about here in terms of shadow people.
Well, right. It's when I was doing my research. I mean, I interviewed over 250 people who have experienced shadow people, and they experience them of all shapes and sizes, the Hat Man being one of those shapes. And I've determined that even though they look the same, not all shadow people are the same. And I think that's something, by giving them the name shadow people, people are, sure that they're just one type of entity. And I think there are quite a few different types of entities that just look the same.
Now, let's kind of backtrack here a little bit, and for those listening right now that have heard the term shadow people but have not really investigated it themselves, what to you, I guess, explain to the people a typical shadow person experience?
Typical, they can happen at night or during the day. Generally, a lot of times it happens at night. A person will be, you know, not really paying attention, maybe getting ready to go to bed, maybe sitting in the living room watching TV and see something out of the corner of their eye. But what they turn to see is a blacker-than-night, human-shaped figure. They can't make out any details, generally can't see the eyes. We'll get to the eyes here in a little bit. Can't see, a nose, mouth, just it looks like a cookie cutter, basically, and they will, walk through the room. That's what they did with me. Sometimes they'll stop and stare. Sometimes they'll actually act afraid. But they walk through the room and disappear. That is the most common type of shadow people encounter.
Now, when most people think of a shadow, I mean, everyone has seen a million shadows in their lifetime, but the way you're describing it, the shadow people is like a name that has been given, but this doesn't necessarily look like a shadow. It looks like as you noted, a blacker than night, two-dimensional figure, correct?
Right. It's the fridge magnets. Pull one of those off and look at the back.
Sure.
Put that in a human shape, and that's basically what a shadow person looks like. It's completely black. Again, most of the cases are two-dimensional. I'd left that out, but most of them are two dimensions. And something else about them that is consistent with all cases is they're almost but not quite exactly human shape. They can be amazingly tall. The arms and legs might be longer or shorter than a human's, and or their head might be larger or smaller.
but something is a little bit off.
So, and they move weird, correct?
Right. They move. Mine moved sort of like a badly animated cartoon. I don't know. Cartoons of Filmation made in the early 1970s. They move a lot like that. Just really, really kind of jerky and awkward.
Now, in recent years, there has been, kids growing up today will talk about the Slender Man, which is, you can trace that back to being an internet urban legend, the genesis of the story of the Slender Man. But is that sort of like, even though you can kind of trace the beginning of that, is that similar to what people really report in terms of shadow people?
Well, the Slender Man, from the reports, it's a tall, unusually thin person. It was made on the internet, I believe. The website Funny or Die, possibly, if I remember correctly, made that up, and they've admitted we just made this up. But people have actually claimed to see this thing, and it's tall, extremely skinny, wears a black suit. Blues Brothers Men in Black type suit, and has and arms that wave about like tentacles, and just the fact that it's seen lurking, maybe that's the only issue that it would have, or the only similarity it would have with shadow people.
So the
Slender Man reports, not people seeing it, but the recent ones with the children, trying to commit murder because of the Slender Man is bizarre and terrifying.
But the idea that what I'm saying is, like, the idea of Slender Man was something that people created, but there could be people who are seeing shadow people, and because all they know is the story of Slender Man, it could be strange and similar enough that they're reporting it as Slender Man. It is essentially what I'm trying to say.
And possibly, yes, that is definitely a possibility. With Slender Man and other types of entities that were created that people claim to actually see, I don't know if you're familiar with the Philip experiment.
No.
That was done in the late 70s, I don't remember, late 70s, I mean late 60s, early 70s. I don't remember what university did this, but they created a ghost. They created a ghost called Philip, and I don't remember what his last name was. It's been a while since I've read about this. But they started communicating with him via a Ouija board, and they were actually getting communication from this entity that they created. So, I mean, my basic thought on that is that, yes, there was an entity out there that was paying attention and was emulating this Philip that they created, and people seeing the Slender Man may be encountering the same thing. Maybe some type of evil, demonic type entity out there has kind of hooked onto it and is impersonating the Slender Man.
We're kind of jumping all over the place here, but I have so many questions for reading the book that's going to be how it's going to be for a while. Since you mentioned that experiment, there was another experiment that you mentioned in your book, Darkness Walks, where they were doing some sort of experiment with this student, and they were messing around with like part of their brain, and unwittingly, this student began to see a shadow person. Tell everybody about this.
Right, it was an experiment by a Swedish scientist, and the experiment was what would happen if you pumped a small bit of electricity into a specific part of a person's brain. And when this was done, the person started, it was low level, and this person started seeing a shadow person over her shoulder. She'd turn around and she would see this shadow being. And the more they increased the voltage, the closer it became, till at one point she was getting really agitated. Because she had a notebook that she was keeping notes in, and she got really agitated and said, "We've got to stop this because this creature is sitting next to me now and trying to take the book out of my hands." Now, this begs a couple of different questions. Well, one, was it causing her to see something?
Sure.
Causing her to her brain to interpret something, and it really wasn't there, or was it stimulating her brain to the point that she could actually see something that was trying to take her notebook? I don't know, but that experiment I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, clearly she felt she saw something, but we don't know if it was her brain being stimulated to see it or if whatever happened increased her awareness to where she did see something that maybe had been there all along. Are you aware of any other experiments that have been done that have either replicated this or done anything similar?
No, I'm not familiar. There very well could have been, but I'm not familiar with any.
So the Hat Man, I want to talk about him a little bit, because there were actually, if I recall correctly, Brad Steiger wrote about two strange entities, maybe more actually, but the two that I remember are the Hat Man, which is a shadow person that, as you would expect, wears a large hat. Sometimes it's a tall hat, sometimes it's a wide-brimmed hat. And he also talked about, and maybe you mentioned this and I didn't see it in the book, but he also talked about the Grinning Man. Which obviously wouldn't be like the back of a magnet because you can see his face. He's always grinning, but it's the same sort of creepy character. How would these two, where would you classify these two in terms of shadow people and other entities?
Well, I'm not familiar with the Grinning Man, but the Hat Man, I put in a completely, a category all to its own because of the fact that it wore, wears a fedora. I interviewed one person who had seen this all his life. He and his brother had, and they called it the cowboy because of the hat. This type of entity seems to be a little bit more violent than violence. Probably a bad term, but people feel when they see this, people feel like it is attacking them, possibly spiritually. They feel like it is causing terror in them, terror other than seeing this entity in their house, and it's feeding off of the fear that it's generating. So I mean, this type of entity, is not a typical type of shadow person. It's more terrifying.
So when people hear this, I mean, some people are obviously thinking, well, I've seen things out of the corner of my eye before and such, and maybe other people are interpreting this as a shadow person. It's all just a trick of light or whatever. But a lot of these reports, and you've got hundreds, I believe, of reports in your book. I mean, it ranges everything from, I mean, this is unmistakably some sort of entity in the room. All the way to people report being attacked, people report being sat on. I mean, there's a physical manifestation as well.
Right. I've talked to people who've been who've woken up with a handprint on them. They felt they had a shadow person they encounter at night, and they felt slapped or scratched, and they'd found a handprint or a scratch on them when they woke up. That's a rather mild one. I talked to one woman. She was from Australia, and she and her roommate were laying down to go to sleep, and her roommate was already asleep, and this shadow person appeared and sexually assaulted her. And she couldn't move, couldn't scream. Eventually, during her struggle to make some sort of noise, she did make enough noise where her roommate woke up, and her roommate screamed, and then the thing took off running. So these type of encounters, the physical, the attacking encounters are really pretty rare, but they do happen.
So when you mention that, obviously, we can go back like hundreds of years and people report the same thing. They were sexually assaulted by this being. I think they used like incubus and succubus were the words used back in the day. Can you kind of take us through a history of some of the older reports of what appears to be the same phenomena?
Well, I interviewed people in with all the major religions, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. I talked with a Cherokee shaman about this, and all of these religions have this entity, the description of this entity, dating back to forever. and depending on what religious viewpoint you have, it depends on what you call it. With Christianity, they're referred to as demons. I interviewed Archbishop James Long, who's an exorcist, and he, when I mentioned shadow people, he started describing exactly what I was just going to describe to him. They're blacker than the darkness around them. They're frightening. They do attack people physically. People feel drained, and that there's something wrong with them. There's something different. They're not an exact representation of a human, which he says. Any sort of demonic entity that presents itself can't look exactly like something God created. It can only mimic it to a certain extent. With Islam, they're the jinn. Jinn have been reported, looking exactly like shadow people. They can look like a normal human being. They can look like a puff of smoke, and they often appear as shadow people, often hanging around graveyards and ruins. American Indian shamanism, the entities, the shadow entities, were once human. They were medicine men. They were medicine men that started using their knowledge and their abilities for greed, other than healing people. And this eventually, sucked the humanity out of them. And they often appear as these shadow entities. So it's been around for as long as people have been around.
So essentially, it's similar to the UFO phenomenon, where whatever time you're living in, there's another explanation for something that people have really been seeing forever.
Right. The Greys might have been elves and trolls back in the day.
Sure.
Right. Exactly. We call them different things because our perception of the world around us is different.
Now, you were a little kid and you saw shadow people. And you no longer do. We should go to that first. I mean, when did they stop becoming a part of your life?
It was about a 6-month period. They didn't show up every night. Sometimes there was one. Sometimes there were about 8 to 10 just walking through my room. They were going from point A to point B, and that would last about 6 months, and then they just stopped. And I haven't seen a shadow entity since, and that's good for me. I don't want to.
You wrote in your book, one of the people that had an experience, I mean, they said something to the effect of, I mean, it really wasn't scary, but just because you didn't know what it was scary, if that makes sense. Is that kind of how you felt as a child, or was there kind of a feeling of foreboding about it, or were you just afraid because you didn't know what it was?
Well, that was it. I was afraid because I didn't know what it was, and I labeled that type of shadow person in my book benign shadows, because
sure,
they didn't take any interest in me whatsoever. They were just walking through my room, and that's what scared me, is it looked like a human type entity walking through my room. I had no idea what it was.
So you mentioned that you're happy to not see them today. Is that because in all of your research you have determined that some of these are not at all benign?
It's yes, for a couple of reasons. One, it might sound kind of glib, but I really like the paranormal as long as it's happening to somebody else.
Sure.
I
agree with that.
I don't want to experience, right. that's one thing. And another thing is you're right. There, a lot of these entities are dangerous, are terrifying. One type of shadow person has glowing red eyes. Do you really want to wake up and see that in your room? No, that type of entity, a lot like the Hat Man, has been reported to people. People feel that it's feeding off of them, and they tend to see these black-eyed shadows at night. They wake up, or they just roll over, getting ready to go to sleep, and it's standing there, looming over them. The red eyes just burning in the night, and they feel all of the energy just sucked right out of them. So, that's another reason, is because they're dangerous.
So is that what people explain when they say that they feel they're being fed off of, that their energy is just kind of being sucked out of them?
Right. It's, I don't like this term, but psychic vampire, I'm sure,
sure
probably most of the audience has heard that term.
Yeah. Now, my father, when he was young, he lived in a house in Idaho, and there was like a cellar down below, and there was a little bed down there, and he had an experience when he was a kid, which is exactly like what some of your witnesses have described in the book, where he didn't just have night paralysis. I've had night paralysis where you just like, you kind of are half awake, but you can't move. And it sucks, but you eventually can move again. This was the one where there was somebody that physically was sitting on him and they were crushing him and he could not move. And he, it was not like, you know, it was not just like your whole body's paralyzed. There was a weight on his chest and there was a being there. And finally he like shoved them off and he ran upstairs. He never went down there again. That would be a typical not good shadow person experience, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That type of encounter, has been called for centuries, the old hag.
Yes.
Because people have, you know, reported for centuries waking up and they can't breathe and they can't move and they have, there's a hideous old woman or some shadow type figure sitting on their chest choking them. Most of the time this is, discounted as hypnagogia. What you described about sleep paralysis is a hypnagogic state. When you are in heavy REM sleep, you're dreaming. Your brain puts you know, pumps chemicals into your body that paralyzes you, because if it didn't, you would have all your involuntary muscle movements would wake you up every 5 minutes. So you're laying there, you're paralyzed from your own sleep. Your own body's doing it to you. You're dreaming. And then something happens to wake you up. And when you wake up, you're still in a dream state, but you're still kind of awake as well. So you see the entire room around you. You see your, you know, where you are. And things that are in the dream state are still really real. Most encounters like that are, like I said, psychologists blame it on you know, being in a hypnagogic state. But, I mean, even if it is, it seems 100% real, but I mean, I'm sure there are lots and lots of cases that are 100% real.
Now, you mentioned in the book that sometimes when you've got a problem in your house with malevolent shadow people, there are people that try to solve this problem through an exorcism. So my first question is, now my dad, when this happened, he ran upstairs and he just didn't go down there anymore. If, you know, 40 years later, 50 years later, 60 years later, I went back to that house, which is still there, by the way, and I decided to go downstairs and sleep on that bed, what is the likelihood that at some point something similar would happen to me?
Well, it depends on if the entity's still there or not. Entities like shadow people, like even ghosts, are generally not chained to a specific area. They can go wherever they want to. Some of them just stay in their, you know, familiar haunts because they like it. So, I mean, there's a chance you'd go down there and nothing would happen to you. There's also a chance that the thing just likes the gloomy basement and is just waiting for the next person to come and lay down.
So when you hear a report of somebody that had a real problem in their house and they went through the exorcism and the house was cleansed, do you kind of classify that in a different sort of way than a traditional shadow person? Does that seem more like it's some sort of spirit, or is this all kind of the same thing?
Well, as I said when we started out, I really have come to the conclusion that shadow people are ghosts in some cases, that they are malevolent demonic entities in other cases. I think that there are some that very well could be interdimensional travelers walking through, you know, a thin spot between dimensions, and that's all we can see of them is the shadow. I think maybe that's what I saw in my room. An exorcism may or may not work. It depends on what entity that's in your house. Also, depending on if it's a demonic entity that's fairly strong, when it might just make it angry.
So
shadow person is like a good overall term, but in the genre of shadow people, you've got the interdimensional travelers, you've got ghosts, you've got demons. Everything kind of fits under the one big umbrella.
Right. It's the appearance is generally the same with all of these.
I mean, there are different variations with the hat, with some of them wear like a monk's cowl. Some don't appear to be wearing anything at all. Some appear to be wearing a business suit. I mean, the appearance is the same other than those little differences, but the behavior of these is wildly different. The shadow people who feed with the red eyes or the hat are a heck of a lot different than the ones I saw walking through my room.
Sure. The ones you talk about going through your room, I mean, if you abide by the theory that you're somehow seeing life in a parallel dimension or something like that, and they can't see you, and for some reason you can see them, that sounds like what was walking through your room.
That's what I think possibly was walking through my room, which I feel a lot better, better than something demonic walking through my room. The ghosts, I think a number of them are ghostly encounters because they behave like ghosts. I spoke with one woman who has a shadow person that occasionally will walk down her steps into her living room, walk around the corner, and into the kitchen and disappear. And, I mean, it doesn't do this regularly enough to put a camera in the room or anything, but every once in a while it does it. And that's, you know, a typical spirit, you know, one that does the same things over and over again.
You mentioned putting up a camera. I saw a video. I don't know. There's so many of them that I don't know if you would even have seen this one, but it was fairly recent. There was a girl like walked into an elevator or something, and all of a sudden you see like this growing puff of like dark smoke, and she freaks out and runs away. And clearly this is not like a typical shadow person. This is more just like, you know, weird smoke or whatever. But, you know, if you go on the internet, there's a million videos of supposed shadow people. Are there any that, I guess comparing it to like the Patterson-Gimlin film for Bigfoot, are there any real good videos where you watch it, it's kind of like, okay, that's what I saw. I think this person really recorded a shadow person.
Yeah, possibly, but I'll have to answer no. I shouldn't even have said put up a camera because I teach at a university. I teach one of the classes I teach is photography, photojournalism, and I teach in the mass media department. I'm also familiar with cameras and or video cameras and TV production and all the tricks of the trade, and I really suck at Photoshop, but I could produce a good picture of a shadow person.
Sure.
And I've had students, film students, who are just whizzes at special effects that produce shadow people that look really good. So even though I'm sure there are people who out there who have captured shadow people on film or digitally, I can't trust them. I can't trust the photographic evidence.
And you know, the other problem is the irony of this is that the way that people describe and the way you describe your shadow person moving, it's like stop motion photography or it's kind of like animation or something like that. I mean, if you were to get a real video of a real shadow person, the movement would probably cause everyone to presume that it was animation, right?
That's an excellent point. Yeah. I mean, the way it moves does look like really jerky stop motion animation.
Somebody had put up a.
You mentioned the Patterson Gimlin film with Bigfoot. I don't know how many times I've watched that film, and if it was produced today, I would say it's complete fake, and it still very well could be. But you know what? It doesn't look like it to me.
And
because it was made in 1967, I trust it a hell of a lot more than I trust anything now.
I can be a fairly skeptical person, but I have watched that so many times. I've watched so many, they got a million ways to enhance it. They've got a million ways to do all sorts of improvements. And every time I watch it, every time there's an enhancement, it makes it look more real and not less real. So I've always been pretty convinced that whatever it was something and not some man in a suit. But that does bring me to Ouija boards. When you were a kid, we're going to start with children, actually. Children see all sorts of things, and you did as well. Do you feel that for many children, it's the typical, well, they've got an overactive imagination? Or do you feel that when you're a kid, you have the ability to see things that as you get older, you lose the ability to see?
It's a little of both. I think there definitely are kids with an overactive imagination, but I think all kids have the ability to see things that we have lost, that we can't anymore. There are so many cases of hauntings, haunted houses where child ghosts are supposed to be there, and people go to those. The adults want to check out the haunted house, and they just take their kids with them. And the kids don't know anything about the haunting, and they act like they're playing with somebody, and they tell their parents, you know, I'm just playing with that little girl over there. So I think there is something. When my daughter was, four years old, maybe three, I think probably four, my wife and I were looking for a new house. And we went into this really old house that was beautiful. I loved it, two stories, and anyway, all the other houses we've been in, my daughter just ran around like crazy, yelling, exploring the new house because, you know, here's an empty house that you've never been in before. It's fun. But this house, as soon as we walked in, she wanted me to pick her up. And every room we walked in, she held me extremely tightly. And I finally asked her, I said, honey, what's wrong? And she whispered in my ear, they're scary. And I said, who's scary? And she goes, the ghosts. As soon as we walked out of the house and into the yard, she was fine. She was herself again.
And she was fine in every other house?
No, she was perfectly fine in every other house. It was just that one, and she said she saw ghosts.
Yeah,
so I tended to believe her.
Little kids always say things, if you were watching, I don't have kids, but I've been around a lot of kids. If a kid tells you they've got an imaginary friend, and they're in the backyard and you're barbecuing, it's funny. But if you watch it on the big screen and there's ominous music, all of a sudden it's terrifying. And and I always wonder, like, you know, you know how kids and their imaginations are. But I guess the other, I'll kind of segue into this. You also talk about people seeing like shadow animals, and you mentioned shadow cats. And this is kind of like the opposite of it, but it kind of ties into kids seeing things. Every now and then my cats just, I mean, they're fighting. I don't even know what. They're looking around at something that's not there. They start running and jumping, and it's like, what are these cats doing? What do they see? And it makes me wonder the same thing, if sometimes animals are aware of things that we're not aware of, just like kids.
Oh, I'm completely convinced of that. First house that my wife and I had, there was, it was an older house, and my wife is convinced that it was haunted, and I kind of agree with her. But the cat, she had a cat when we got married, and it would stare, just sit in this house right. It didn't like going in the kitchen, but it would sit right outside the kitchen and stare at a spot in the kitchen, just the same spot all the time. We were kind of curious about that, and then family members started seeing our cat out of the corner of their eye, and they would, you know, try to avoid stepping on it, and then look, and the cat would be asleep on a couch, not under their feet. And I saw this a couple of times as well. So, yeah, I think there was possibly the ghost of a cat in our house that our cat would react to.
My uncle, actually, his cat just, like, mysterious death. It was 4 years old, and he presumes it was like some, you know, something wrong with its cat food or something like that. But the point of this is, he still sees his cat, and the cat's gone. But every now and then, you know, there's a cat. It kind of, like, it doesn't scare him, but it kind of really weirds him out that he's still seeing this thing, which is understandable.
Yeah, I've interviewed people who've not seen their cat, but their cat, or in one case it was a dog, had died, and they'd really loved this animal. And the one lady with the cat was going to sleep, and she felt her cat jump up on her bed and start pawing at her and lay down. And the guy with the dog would hear his dog padding around the hardwood floors and would bark occasionally. Yeah, I wouldn't so much like that either.
Now, going back to the Ouija board, you talk a lot about Ouija boards in the book, and as noted, you were a little kid, and so most likely, I mean, these things just happen. You didn't call them into your life. And in the book, you've got stories of people that it appears that they would have lived a perfectly fine, shadow person-free life until, for whatever reason and however they did it, they called this into their life. And a Ouija board is one way. We'll talk about that in a second. What are some other ways that witnesses that you have talked to have claimed, somehow by doing this, I brought a shadow person into my house?
Well, the Ouija board is a tool. One I don't suggest anyone to use ever, because people will disagree with me on this because I've had arguments with people, but I've never personally talked to somebody who's had a positive experience. It's always been something negative has happened, just like you described, called something bad into the house. That can be the same with playing around with automatic writing, or, you know, seances, or even just simply talking. And it's not necessarily shadow people. It's any type of entity that might be out there listening. I interviewed a guy in southern Missouri a few years ago who was going to hunt. And he had a little trailer, a little pop-up trailer that he kept out in the back 40 where he, you know, would camp out there for a few days while he hunted. And one night he said he was, the first night right before deer season, he was having a couple of beers and sitting in front of a campfire he'd made. And he said he could feel that something was watching him. So he verbally just said out loud, "Hey, somebody's out there. Come sit by the fire and have a beer with me." And
bad idea
happens, but he put the fire out later and went to sleep. And later his the little trailer he had, the little camper, was attacked by something, rocked back and forth, and was trying to get in through the door. And eventually it did, you know, he shot through the door and it went away. But then he discovered later that it followed him, because whenever he would walk through a door, it would open in front of him and then close behind him. Not all the way, but it would, like, move 6 inches. And then when he turned around, it would swing back. And he said it happened everywhere. So he had invited something into his life. I mean, with shadow people, that could work the same as well.
You know, there's a rational part of my mind that just goes, come on, Hasbro mass produces Ouija boards. They're sold at every toy store. I mean, come on now. But then there's another part of me that's...
Even came up with a pink and purple Ouija board just specifically to target young girls.
That's right. That's right. But there's also that part of me that, you know, I don't really believe, but I'm not going to try. You know what I mean? There's always that just in case part of my brain when it comes to Ouija boards. But I mean, you've got a lot of stories of people, and you know, you go online and there's a million stories of people that insist that by usage of this toy, they have brought something terrible into their lives.
Yes, that's and one of the more terrifying, I think. Was a college student. She and her friends, they lived on the third floor of their dorm, and they decided to play around with a Ouija board. And the room, when they started talking with this entity, got really cold. And the candles blew out, and the girl screamed, and they lit them back again. And they started talking. When they asked the entity, you know, who it was, the entity spelled out Satan, and the girl screamed again. And they asked where he was. And he said, "I'm right outside your window." And they looked, and there was a shadow man standing in the window outside the dorm. And they were on the third floor. So they shrieked and ran out the door. And it was a religious college, and the next day they got a priest who yelled at them and blessed the room. But none of them lived there anymore. They all moved out that dorm. But that sort of encounter is you know, typical for you know, for the terrifying factor of most of the Ouija board occurrences that I've you know, interviewed people about.
Now, I think that there are people listening to this right now that are thinking, Brian, you're out of your mind. I have a Ouija board. We play with it. Nothing strange has ever happened. I've certainly not called an evil spirit into my house or anything like that. But there are other people. And keep in mind, millions of these Ouija boards are out there right now. And there are not millions of reports, but there are many of them. Is it a case where, why do some people attract something and others do not? Is it a matter of intention? I mean, do you have to really believe that this thing is going to work in order to call something through it? Or why do you think some people experience something, but maybe the majority do not?
It would depend on a couple of factors, I think. One, and it's the danger of going to some place that's supposedly really haunted is an entity just might like you and follow you home. It might be, you know, it's the same with a Ouija board. You might actually contact something that you know, likes you for some reason, feels some attachment, or, you know, really, really wants, you know, to eat your soul or something to that effect. And it might be something that they say during the, Ouija board session. They might invite it in. I've talked with a number of people who have had an entity, and they've said, well, show yourself, or, you know, show me that you're here, and that is an invitation to set up camp and stay a while.
Now, one potentially alarming aspect of this is you have gotten. I mean, we talked briefly about some people see entities with red eyes, and as one would expect, an entity with red eyes is up to no good. And there are people that not only have reported being like attacked, but some people believe that whatever this was, it was trying to kill them. Is that correct?
Yes. One specific case was a guy named Mick from Toronto, who had seen a shadow people or shadow person a number of times, and eventually the thing attacked him and actually spoke with him, and that is extremely rare. People generally don't ever hear that. And it told him exactly what it wanted to do. It wanted to kill him. It wanted to devour his soul and kill him. And he said he had a mental fight with it. It wasn't a physical thing. It was a mental, emotional thing. And it eventually left him. But he said that he was, you know, physically sick for a long time afterward.
Now, the obvious question is, if there is a report of a shadow person threatening to kill someone, I mean, there's no way to know because these people would be dead. But do you believe that there are people who have been killed during an encounter with a shadow person?
Yeah, right. I have no idea. I have no clue. But I mean, maybe so. Maybe the people who are normally healthy and, you know, die at 34 years old in their apartment of natural, quote, natural causes, maybe that's what happened.
I mean,
maybe
one could argue
get into their house. Who knows?
Sure. One could argue that everybody that dies had a visit with a shadow person who came to take them away.
I've had a couple of stories right along those lines. I was contacted by a woman to tell me her husband's story. He had stage four cancer, and to the point of hospice. I mean, he was going, and everybody knew it, and hospice was coming to the house to see him, and he kept reporting these shadow beings clustered around his bed, and he said it looked like they were just waiting. And she it bothered her, of course, because her husband was so agitated, but she didn't see them. And at one point he convinced her to take him somewhere. Even though he was really sick, she took him, and they just one last weekend away, and she took him to a beachside city and got a hotel room and about 150 miles away, and he told her that he had wanted to go this far away to run from these shadow entities because he didn't want them around him when he died, and he started crying when he was laying in bed because they'd followed him. Her dad was a Methodist minister, so she prayed, and he said that they went away, and then he passed on. But he felt that they were definitely waiting for him to go.
Now, I bring that up because you mentioned that, you know, sometimes people see a guy with a hat, and other people see a person kind of, I guess to make it easy for everyone to visualize, the Grim Reaper, just without the big sickle. And maybe the reason, one of the reasons that the Grim Reaper became such an archetypal figure, if that's the word, is that there were reports back then of some guy in a cloak or a number of them waiting to take you away at the end.
Right. Yeah. I think that exactly. A woman who kept seeing a shadow person outside her house. That's exactly what happened. She said she noticed it standing by a lamppost in the same spot. It wasn't there all the time. It kept coming and going. And her neighbor was elderly and sick. And when her neighbor died, the thing went away. So yes, maybe that's exactly where the archetype came from.
Now, if somebody, we mentioned a little bit about this, but we can go a little more in depth. If someone is concerned that that they've got a shadow person in their house or following them or wherever, you mentioned prayer. We mentioned exorcisms. I mean, what are some of the things that a person can do to try to get this out of their life?
Okay, and this, it drives me crazy when people contact me asking, you know, what should I do to get rid of this entity? And I'm a journalist. that's what I do. That's what I've always done. And I interview people. I get their stories, and so all the advice that I can give is information that I've gotten from people who have successfully gotten rid of shadow entities. And basically, it boils down to something verbal and something positive. Shadow people have reportedly been driven away by prayer. That's positive. That's verbal. People singing a happy song, or I've had a couple of people tell me that they just simply laughed at the shadow people and they went away.
Yeah, you wrote that. Comedy. Comedy seems to work.
Yeah, comedy. I mean, it's happy. It's happy, and the verbal component seems to be important as well.
Now, there are other urban legends of strange beings. I can run over a couple of these and just sort of let me know, do these fall into the same category or are these something altogether different? I'm sure you have probably heard of the story of the black-eyed kids. They show up at your door and black eyes.
I've written extensively about them. Yeah, I'm really familiar with them.
What are they?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. The black-eyed kids, the basic encounter is they will approach you at your house or while you're in your car or when you're walking someplace, you know, alone, and they will ask you to help them. Give me a ride back home. I need money. They'll come to your door. I'm being chased by somebody. Please help me. They're out somewhere. I'm lost. Can you take me to this place? And generally the person feels like, you know, I need to help this kid because it's a child. I want to help. But something's off. Something's wrong. The kids are dressed strangely, either 30 years out of date or they're grimy. They're all reported to have bad breath, and the kids are all reported to speak a lot more maturely than what their age would give. And in that, the person, you know, realizes there's something wrong here. I should say no. And then they realize, they look at the eyes, and the eyes are completely black. No iris, no whites, nothing, just black. And this terrifies them, and generally at that point is when they drive off, they slam the door in their face, or they run away. That's a typical encounter. I haven't really talked to people who've let them into their house. This started in 1998. A guy named Brian Bethel, he's a journalist in Texas, in Arlington, Texas, and he went to pay his cable bill. It was at a strip mall, and he parked. It was late at night. He wrote his check out on the dash. He was going to get out and slip it through the night deposit, and he noticed that there were a couple of kids standing outside. They were 16 and 14, he said they looked, and they wanted him to say, "We want to go watch this movie. Would you take us home to get money?" And he looked over at the marquee of the theater, and the movie had started like an hour ago. And again, he felt compelled to help. So he started to open the door and noted, because he had the window down just a little bit, and he noticed the black eyes. And they got really insistent, and he got terrified, and he pulled out of there. And it just took him seconds to pull away, and he said he looked in his mirror, and they were completely gone. He posted this on a forum on the internet back in 80 or 98, and that's where the Black Eyed Kids meme came from. And I interviewed Brian, and he said he's still scared to death going by that strip mall.
You've got a bunch of different books here. Is there any of them that tackle that topic in more detail?
No. I do have a Black Eyed Kid encounter, two Black Eyed Kid encounters. One in my book, What Lurks Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
That book, I found all the paranormal occurrences within a 100-mile radius of my house. And there's one in a book called Paranormal Missouri. I had compiled probably over 100 Black Eyed Kid encounters from around the planet, and I was planning on writing a book about it, and my wife said, "Jason, those things scare the hell out of me, and if you write this book and one shows up at our house, I'm going to be so pissed." So knowing where how to pick my battles, I did not pursue writing that book.
Oh, man.
A guy named David Weatherly finally wrote one, and I'm really happy that David did that. So there is a book on the Black Eyed Kids out there. I haven't read it yet, but I plan to.
And David Weatherly. So you got 100 reports, though.
Yes.
Now,
and
is this...
From,
go ahead.
All over, literally all over the world. I mean, all over North America, from Brazil. I got one from South Africa, Dubai, Australia, some from Europe. I mean, this is a worldwide phenomenon.
Now, going full circle at the beginning of this interview, I was talking about, you know, shadow people, and I guess it's because of the term being new. You know, it seems like something that's a relatively recent occurrence, but as noted, you can go all the way back in history and see them virtually to the beginning of time. From investigating the Black Eyed Kids, was it a case where, I mean, it's all sprung up since 1998, or was it just one report in 1998 got the ball rolling and opened up investigations that date back to sightings hundreds of years ago?
I think that's the case. I think that's the case because I you know, again, talked with you know, religious people who have said, you know, these are people possessed. I've talked with other people who are convinced these Black Eyed Kids are alien hybrids. I even got an email from one guy claiming that he was a black-eyed person, and his race was descendant from Eve and the serpent from the garden. So, I mean, what they
are?
It's
quite the family
tree,
right
there. I
don't
know. Yeah. That's a heck of a family tree. Yeah.
Now you obviously have you. I'm sure you get a million emails. You've got the forum, which we can talk about in a moment, and on the internet, especially through the anonymity of email and message boards and that sort of thing. I mean, anybody can tell you any story that they want. Do you feel that you've developed a good sense of, you know, based on things you know, what is likely a true story and what is likely someone just going, this would be a fun story to make up here on this forum?
I've got a really good BS detector. I was a working print journalist for 17 years. And I've had to deal with so many people who were just wanting publicity. They were making their story up, and I had a pretty good feeling for those people. And I've weeded out. I mean, for everything I've written, whatever books that I've written on the paranormal, all the people's stories in there, I am convinced that at least I'm convinced that the people telling me the story are positive they encountered that. I'm sure that they have. I left out more stories in all my books than I put in, just because I knew that they weren't true. I've got a policy with people that if they tell me they saw a ghost, or they tell me that they've seen Bigfoot, or they've encountered something else, you know, on face value, I'll believe them until I start, you know, interviewing them more deeply and their story either sticks or falls apart. But if they're the type of person who claims that they've seen a ghost, they've been aboard a UFO, they had lunch with Bigfoot and gave JFK a back rub, you know, at that point, no, your credibility's totally blown.
Sure. And so obviously, since you've mentioned Bigfoot a few times, I would presume that Paranormal Missouri Show Me Your Monsters would have Bigfoot stories in there?
Yes, and so does the What Lurks Beyond, the Paranormal in Your Backyard. I've got a couple of Bigfoot stories in there as well. And that's the one entity. I wrote a piece for Mysterious Universe recently that got some good comments, and I got some flack for it because I basically said, in order for us to prove anything paranormal, it can't be us. It has to be the scientific community, or whatever evidence we gather is useless. And that the most provable has got to be Bigfoot, got to be some kind of cryptid. Somebody's got to shoot it, hit it with a car, take it into to a university and let them dissect it. So, I mean, I've got, if I was a betting man, I'd put my money on Bigfoot being the thing that gets discovered.
So what were people upset about? That you did they feel that you were like suggesting that it be shot, or did they just think that no, we'll discover something else first?
I think I offended people who are ghost hunters. I also referred to Bigfoot hunters as if you're not prepared to shoot it, you're just a hiker. Bigfoot researchers are out there collecting hair samples and scasp, and they end up being from some different animal. And if you really, really want to prove this thing exists, you got to kill one.
Well, that would be indisputable evidence right there if you had a body.
Exactly.
The book is Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us by Jason Offit. And as noted, you've got a lot of different books here. What Lurks Beyond, The Paranormal in Your Backyard, Paranormal Missouri, Show Me Your Monsters. Momo, I believe, was the name of the Bigfoot-type creature in Missouri. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. I was actually on an episode of Monsters and Mysteries in America last season talking about Momo. That was a big, scary sighting from the early 70s.
That's right, old school. That's the kind of thing I remember the best, was stories of Momo. Why don't you, let's get some plugs out here. Anything you've got online, any social media websites, and of course, how people can find out more about your books.
My books, you can find out more about them at, I've got a blog. I haven't updated it for a while because I just got a contract for a couple of novels, so I've been spending my writing energy on that. Is From the Shadows. It's from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. And I've got 5 years of columns that, for four and a half of them, they were weekly columns of paranormal encounters from everything from time travel to shadow people, black-eyed kids, a golem, gnomes, Bigfoot, dogmen, all sorts of paranormal encounters are on that. All my books are available on Amazon.com, and there are links to that on my From the Shadows website as well. I've got an author site on Facebook if anybody wants to join that.
Man, I read this book, and we did a show on shadow people because it had been strongly requested. But as I look through your blog here, and you mentioned dog men, and you got something here on Roswell. Hopefully we can do another show because I got a lot of questions for you. So one of these days we need to do this again.
Hey, this has been a pleasure. I'd be happy to be back on again.
Of course, this is Jason Offit, everybody. You can check out his website, From the Shadows. That's from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. You can also check him out on Amazon, Jason Offit. You can spell it O-F-F-U-T-T, Jason Offit. We'll have a link on the front page as well. So you can check out Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. It was the book we talked about today, and all of his other books as well. And Jason, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
All right. Like I said, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to it.
And of course, we'll be back in just a moment with more, everybody. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. We're back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We are here every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And I got a lot of stuff here. We got 15 minutes left and a lot of stuff, so let's not waste any time. Got a lot of interesting tweets on this topic, as well as some emails, so I want to get right into that. Debbie here on Twitter says, I saw a combination of a grinning man and a hat man when I was 3 years old. He had red eyes and lips. So that is an experience there with an individual, a shadow person there. And also an email here that I got from... I talked earlier about Andrew had sent me a tweet, and I told him to give me more information. Andrew here says, I've worked at the Mitchell Library here in Glasgow, Scotland, and many strange things have happened to me over the 9 years I have worked here. The building has 8 levels and 3 basement levels. Over the years, the levels I've had many experiences on are levels 7, level 3, and basement 2. At basement 2, I have seen things move out of the corner of my eye, and at one point I saw at the outline of a man at the end of a hall, almost like peeking out. So when I moved towards the figure, it quickly moves around the corner, only to find nothing there. At level 3, I've had a coin thrown at me and a friend, and there's also an uneasiness whenever you walk through the level, with many staff claiming they have seen a woman in 1940s-style clothing, and some say they have seen her with an umbrella. But the most haunted level has to be level 7. This is a level closed off to the public. It was once a restaurant, but now split into room for graphic designs. I've had 2 bad experiences over the last year on this level. The first was one morning around 6 a.m. We had an alarm trip in the old kitchen on level 7. So I went up to check it out. I unlocked the door, had a look around. Nothing is there. I started to walk to the door, and all of a sudden, a glass smashed over the other side of the room. As I went over to investigate, I only found a coffee mug in pieces. But as I started to pick up the broken mug, the door slammed closed, and a man laughed out loud, and I got out of there fast. Second strange time, about a year later, was a room next to the old kitchen where there was a dining room. Again, the alarm went off in the old dining room 7. I was asked to go have a look, so I went there, and nothing seemed out of place. The room needs a code to get in, so I punched in the code. I looked around when suddenly I heard a footstep around me. I turned around, and I swear I saw a figure of a person, but only for a second. I freaked out and walked fast to the door, and again, I heard a man's laugh. Needless to say, I have not gone up there since. Pardon me. That is from Andrew there. So another shadow person story. And by the way, if you would like information on the book, Jason Offit's book, once again, is Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. It is available on Amazon.com. So head up there and check that book out. We will have him back on again at some point to talk more of the strange stuff that he covers. But a fascinating interview right there. Also here on Twitter, the guy you had on After Dark was interesting. You need to find somebody on Haunted Kansas. That is from Cargo. So I would presume that he lives in Kansas And that's why he wants that. And also, Randy says, on Shadow People, check out the latest episode of Doctor Who. Listen, he says. So maybe head up there and check that out. If you've had an experience with a shadow person, probably won't have a lot of time tonight to go over it, but in the future, you are welcome to call in and tell us about that. Drop us an email as well, and we'll be talking about more of these stories in the future. I can't believe we've gone almost 2 hours and I haven't read a single news article here today, but that's what happens when you're bombarded with phone calls prior to getting that interview going. Cargo here also, regarding Haunted Kansas, says, my great uncle is supposed to be the wolf boy in the stories of Stoll, Kansas. So I guess that means I'm going to have to Google wolf boy and Stoll, Kansas, and see what it says here. All right. This is, this is interesting. This sounds familiar, actually. Stoll Cemetery is in Kansas. If you go up to prairieghost.com/stoll, STULL.html, you can read about the haunted Kansas Stoll Cemetery in rural Kansas. There are graveyards across America, places with names like Bachelor's Grove and Stoll Cemetery defy all definitions of a haunted cemetery. There are places to go beyond the legends of merely being haunted and enter into the realm of the diabolical. They are places said to be so terrifying the devil himself holds court with his worshipers there. And in the case of Stoll, Kansas, Stoll Cemetery in Kansas, it is one of the gateways to hell itself. How terrifying are these places? There are a few of us who would challenge the supernatural presence of a place like Bachelor's Grove. And there are some who claim that Stoll Cemetery does not deserve the blood-curdling reputation that has gotten over the years. And on the topic of this wolf boy, author Lisa Hefner Heitz has collected numerous legends that have added to the mythology of Stoll Cemetery. Some of them include the fact that the devil also appears at Stoll on the last night of winter or the first night of spring. We're actually heading into the first night of fall here, actually, in a day or so. He comes to visit a witch that is buried there. Coincidentally, an old tombstone bearing the name Wittich, W-I-T-T-I-C-H, is located fairly close to the old church. It should also be mentioned that there are rumors that an old tree in the graveyard, which was cut down a year or so ago, was once used as a gallows for condemned witches. There's also said to be a grave in the cemetery that holds the bones of a, quote, child of Satan, who was born of the devil and a witch. The child was so deformed that he only lived for a couple of days, and the body was buried in Stoll. Some say that his ghost may walk here, as there supposedly was a photo taken a few years ago that shows a werewolf-like boy peering out from behind a tree. And sadly, it does not appear that that photograph is included here, which disappoints me. If anybody has seen that photograph, please, I would like to see it. You know, what's funny is I live in Bothell, Washington, which is a pretty small town. Not that small, actually, but it's about 20 minutes north of Seattle. And they have, I've lived here all my life, and they are rebuilding Bothell. And so they've got a website that tells you all of the things that they're going to be doing to Bothell. And I live here in a little housing development, and I like to go walking, but we don't have a sidewalk at the top of our hill that heads towards Bothell. And I'm hoping that they're going to build one there. Certainly make walking a lot easier to have a sidewalk and not have to walk on the road, which is... I don't live in a rural area, but there are deer, and we do have roads without sidewalks around here. And anyway, the point of all of this is, I went to the website. They've got a new website that's telling you what they're going to be doing in Bothell. So I'm going up there, and I'm looking around, and I discover that within walking distance, short walking distance from my house, I'm talking maybe a five-minute walk, there is an old cemetery that I didn't know it existed. I never even heard of it. And I forget the name of it off the top of my head. But essentially, all of the very first settlers in Bothell in the mid to late 1800s, the founders of Bothell are all buried in this cemetery. And I'm looking at the address, and I'm like, that is right by my house. How have I never heard of this before? And so I went on Google Maps, and I'm looking at where it's at, and it's like, as God is my witness, I drive this road every single day. Every day of my life on the way to the jiu-jitsu school that I run, I drive down this road. And I never knew there was a cemetery there. So the other day, I drove out there, and sure enough, you drive down this road. It is literally like there are these, it's just like there's trees and foliage, and there's a tiny little driveway that you would never even notice. You think it's the driveway to somebody's house, and you turn in there, and there is this old cemetery, 150 years old, where the earliest settlers in Bothell have been buried. And I went there, and I managed, the first time I drove there, it was in the middle of the night, and I drove in there, and boy, is this place creepy. So I'm going to be doing a little bit of investigation into this cemetery here and see if I can find any weird stories about it. There's another cemetery in Bothell that's even weirder. You drive up this, it's kind of up this back road. I mean, you don't see it from anywhere. You've got to look for it. And not only is it a cemetery, and I've been there, and there are a lot of really, really old graves from the 1800s, and I think maybe even earlier. I'd have to go back and check. But they've got just the weirdest, the cemetery, one side of it is like, it's not fenced off, but they planted like a whole bunch of trees. And the trees go straight up, and they're really big, and they're really close together, and it makes that place very dark. And it's so creepy. But maybe I'll have to do some investigations there as well, see if I can get any EVPs. All right, everybody, we've got to wrap it up. We're out of time here. Thanks to everybody who participated tonight. Everybody who called, emailed, and tweeted here. Cargo, a couple last tweets. He has a picture of his great uncle, the Wolf Boy, before he died of a disease. And the band Skinny Puppy took a piece of his tombstone as well, he says. And Andrew here notes, fantastic episode of After Dark Radio tonight. Keep up the great work, Brian. I do very much appreciate that. Nick as well, who retweeted that. As noted, we are up here every single Friday night live, 11 p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. You can check out a replay on Saturday. You can also head up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com and check out the replay there as well. The file will be up for a full week for you to download. It's a free MP3. Head up there, check it out, and please spread the word about the show. If you've got friends who love this topic, let them know about After Dark Radio. Check out AfterDarkRadioShow.com for the Facebook page or the Twitter account, everything like that. Of course, a huge thank you, as always, to our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. Check out all of the shows on the Dark Matter Radio Network up at DarkMatterRadio.net. Big thanks to Keith, the great Art Bell, and all of the listeners. Thanks again, everybody, so much as always. We shall talk to you again next week with a brand new show, After Dark Radio, on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. Such a winsome love that I pinched myself.
As she onward sped, I shook my